All right, we will go ahead and get started. Thanks all for joining us. My name is Patrick O'Shaughnessy. I cover capital markets here at Raymond James. Next up, we have E*TRADE. For the format of this, we're just going to do a Q&A session between Brett Goodman, Chief Communications Officer, and myself. Unfortunately, CFO Mike Pizzi is down with the flu, so we wish him quick recovery. But Brett can fill in ably in Mike's stead. So we will just get the Q&A kicked off. So Brett, let's start with kind of current events. There's a lot of stuff going on in the market right now, a lot of market volatility. What's client engagement been like for E*TRADE in recent weeks? I think you just put out your February DARTs today. They look pretty strong. What sort of products have clients been trading? Anything stand out about the trading behavior?
Sure. So first, Patrick, thanks very much for having us. This is a conference we look forward to all year, and not just because you guys impeccably time escaping the Northeast, but the interactions with investors here are truly top-notch. So like you said, Mike Pizzi, our CFO, he offers his regrets for not being able to join today, but hopefully I get through these all right. So on volatility, throughout our history, it has been a tremendous positive for the retail business. Until about 5 years ago, I would peg volatility or the VIX as the tightest correlation to retail trading activity. So of all market indicators and dynamics, that was the thing that was sort of closest tied to trading. In recent years, that's really decoupled, and the correlation that is. And in 2017, through a year of very muted volatility, we realized records across customer activity metrics. So strongest trading in the firm's history, strongest net flows in over a decade, strongest account growth in over a decade or near a decade, strongest derivative mix, strongest margin levels. So across the board, extremely strong client engagement on very low volatility. Enter 2018, and with a modest uptick in volatility in January, we all kind of got really excited about it, and it seemed to drive a little bit more activity. So when we published our January results, it also showed a record for our best month in history. Well, flash forward to last month, and in particular, the first full trading week in February, there was a dramatic spike in volatility, and it was followed by major market indices sort of entering correction territory, and our customers showed up in a big way to participate in that activity. So we published results this morning for February, and at 330,000 daily average revenue trades, it's our strongest month ever. So very, very strong, and I think it's probably too short a period to call a trend or to say that once again volatility is driving trading, but it certainly seems to be something that our customers are showing up to participate in. It has to be volatility with sort of an upward-biased market. If it's volatility and on the other side the market falls out of bed, that's not the right environment for a retail trader. But in particular, early February showed a spike, and then the market really rebounded. I think retail gets really excited to show up and participate. So that's it from sort of volatility-driving trading. I think we'll see whether or not it's sort of back to stay, but it certainly feels like the trading days of yesteryear where retail engagement is really strong following market volatility. In terms of the specific products, E*TRADE's customer base is generally a very good representation of the market as a whole. So to the extent there are securities you're reading about on the front page of the paper or seeing across the screen on the financial news networks, it's a very safe assumption that those are the primary securities that are being transacted in by our customers. So I would say there was nothing that diverged from that trend during February. Our customers from a sector and from a security standpoint, they were broadly in line with the securities of broader market interest and broader market volume. The one element that has continued to improve for us is really around derivative trading. So this morning we disclosed 31% of that 330,000 daily average revenue trades was in derivatives transactions. So, you know, at north of 100,000 trades in options or in derivatives, that's a firm record by far and away. So that really sort of speaks to our strategy to engage these derivative engaged traders to make sure that we have the right platforms that are available for them to capitalize on the market opportunity. So we feel pretty good about that. And in terms of other behaviors, you know, our customers seem very engaged. I mean, you know, by the point of the 330,000 DARTs, that's one point, but In terms of the cash as a percentage of brokerage assets, at 15% in January, that's the very low end of the historic range, right? So there's sort of the two elements of that. One, the securities valuations have been improving, so that has a dilutive impact on the cash that doesn't move with the market. But the other impact is much more active, right? The other element of that calculus is that customers are strong net buyers of securities. So in January, we had $1.5 billion in net securities purchases. That's really strong for us. So our customers definitely seem to be very much engaged in the market. The other element that really sort of speaks to engagement and confidence is margin. That's not just the willingness to deploy at a market opportunity, but it's sort of the ultimate gauge of investor confidence in that they're willing to borrow to deploy. And margin, which hit a record fall at the end of the year, hit another record in January, right? So that continued to sort of increase as well. So I think broadly, all the behavior just speaks to sort of strong engagement by customers. Whether or not that's solely driven by volatility, I think time will tell.
Got it. And building off that point, does any of that strong investor engagement kind of worry you from the perspective of it's too good to last, or it's unhealthy for our clients to be taking on this much margin debt? Or do you think maybe this is actually the more normalized world and what we saw the last several years was more the outlier?
Yeah. I don't think it's unhealthy. I mean, I think we have over $400 billion in client securities or client assets, rather. A $9 billion margin book doesn't speak to sort of outsized risk. And that's really used by a concentrated portion of higher activity clients, right? So I wouldn't say that that's sort of a broad-based product. From our chair, we show up to have the platform, the tools, the service offering to be able to answer customers' needs. And I think we feel really good about the market volumes and how our service has held up and how our platforms do under these extreme volumes. So we feel like we're doing our job. In terms of whether or not customer trading will persist at this level, I think it'd be pretty foolish to say that every month we'll print a record. And I think at some point, the market will move in a direction that will have customers less engaged. But right now, they seem very much engaged, and we are more than happy to serve them during that period of engagement.
Gotcha. And you touched on, hey, your clients are trading the things that are in the headlines. One of the things that's in the headlines are these volatility ETNs, and a couple of them very famously basically went bust. Are your clients trading products like these? And if they are, is there any risk exposure for E*TRADE?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, to that very point, right? Securities that are in the headlines, very safe assumption that our customers are engaged. So we did have certain clients that were engaged in some of these trades. What we do as a company is really around sort of risk mitigation for us, but it also really serves the customer in terms of not allowing them to have sort of compounded risk on leverage products. And really through the 2013 and on period, we invested heavily in enterprise risk management. And one of the components of that investment was really a focus on margin risk tools. So we have very strong tools that allow us to monitor margin risk on a real-time basis. And to the extent there is outsized risk in an account, we have the tools to reach out to the customer very quickly and either request that they add additional equity or liquidate the position. But then more importantly, we have the ability on a real-time basis to change the margin requirements for certain securities. So you can have margin requirements well outside of what the Reg T minimum would be, where if a product has two times leverage, we'll sort of double the margin requirement. So you basically remove the compounding impact of leverage where you're almost dissuading anybody from taking a bet that compounds that leverage. So if it's three times levered, we'll triple the margin requirement and so on. If there are other securities that show real risk from a liquidity standpoint or just from an overall volatility standpoint, we can ratchet the margin up as high as 100%, which is what we'll do on volatile and high-risk securities. So that practice, I think, has served us very well in terms of protecting the firm, but it also really protects clients that might not do all the risk assessment on the front end before they enter a transaction. So I think we feel good about the way that that worked. Now, in terms of clients that engaged in these and these ETNs that garnered headlines and that blew up, it's safe to assume that there were customer losses, but nothing outsized and nothing worth talking about.
Okay, great. Let's turn to the board of directors' four goals for E-Trade. Net new asset growth of 5.8%, net new account growth of 4.8%, 35% of DARTs coming from derivatives, and managed product balances of $6 billion. How do you feel you're tracking towards those goals?
Yeah, feel pretty good. Next. So, look, in terms of our, you know, mathematical tracking towards the goals, anybody can look at slide 15 of the investor presentation. I think we lay out exactly how we're tracking. I want to give a little bit of context on how we set those goals, why, the timeline, and some of the progress. So in Q3 of 2016, the board and management were not pleased with the company's rate of organic growth. And we wanted to illustrate that we could indeed grow in our core brokerage business, which was, we felt, really lagging from a competitive standpoint. And so we wanted to put out metrics that were achievable, yet I think really did demonstrate a reach for growth or our ability to reinvigorate growth in the franchise. Now, the first two that you mentioned, account growth and asset growth, those are truly growth measures, right? The next two, which are managed assets and derivative mix, those are points of strategy, and I'll talk about those in a second. So on the account growth front, we feel great, right? 2016, we brought in 172,000 net new accounts. In Q4, we brought in 64,000. In January, we brought in 16,000. That was our best January ever, and January is a pretty strong month from a seasonal standpoint. So we feel great. And if you look at that on a growth rate standpoint, that's well within the range of this growth objective that we laid out. Right? It's above 5% annualized growth. So on the account front, I think we feel very good. On the asset side, it's more difficult. But we definitely have a plan that we feel very confident in achieving in terms of bringing in those assets. So again, last year, $12.2 billion in net new brokerage assets, firm record. And we feel really good about how we're trending thus far this year. And the plans we have in place, they span sort of deeper than the expected. I mean, we've got strong marketing plans that I think really drive at that growth. Our platforms, we believe, are sort of optimized for the current market environment and will attract the right level of customer and the right type of customer on board. What we've been doing in managed product that I'll talk about in a second, we think we'll bring on additional assets. And then we have the corporate services channel, which is also a fountain for strategic growth for the company. And just to spend 2 seconds on that for those that don't know, we are the largest provider of stock plan administration for public companies. So we serve roughly 20% of the S&P 500. That equates to around, I know this is a funny metric, it's around 1,000 corporate clients. So we obviously have clients that are outside of the S&P 500. And that's about 1.5 million customer accounts, right? So if you are an employee of a public company that uses E-Trade as their platform, when you are granted compensation in the form of securities, that's done through the E-Trade platform. That's a tremendous opportunity for us because you as an employee, you don't choose E-Trade, your company does. But when you exercise your stock or your option and you wind up in an E-Trade account, that's a great opportunity for us to delight you with our service and wow you with our platform and all the other beautiful things that will get you to bring more on board. So for us, that's a great, it's a great feeder channel for growth. We've done a lot to really amplify that level of growth in the last couple of years. And one of the things that in Q3 of 16, when we effected the management transition, Carl, our CEO, moved very quickly to reposition this organization. And he did so in a way that really focused them on the right growth, right, on growing new accounts, where I think before the focus might have been a little bit muddied and it might have been a little bit more broad. So he really trained the entire organization on just winning new accounts. And an illustration of that is this year, we have about $14 billion in plan assets that are able to bring on board in the next 12 months. So those are signed clients and $14 billion in assets that we expect to bring on board. In comparison to 2017, that was around $6 billion. And for the year before that, it was around $5 billion. So we are increasing the rate of growth in the corporate services channel by multiples. And that, I think, will be a great driver of asset growth. And then back to the growth goal, this is, this is clearly the most difficult one for us to hit, but it's one that I really do feel like we're appropriately focused. Now, in Q3 of 2016, if we were to look at increasing the rate of growth by 200 to 300 basis points in just assets, on that base, that would have equated to around $15.5 billion in assets, right? Like I said, last year we brought in $12.2 billion. So I think we're doing really well. There is a little bit of a mathematical impact of the market rally that we didn't totally anticipate, but I still think that getting to our goal is wholly achievable, so we feel really good about it. On the other two, which I said are points of strategy, derivative mix of 35%, we set that really following the acquisition of Options House, which was an aspirational goal for where we thought the mix of derivative transactions should be as a portion of our overall trades. That was sort of in line with some of the competitive levels that we saw. And I'll get to why options are so important in a moment. But on that calculation, there was no way in Q3 of 16 we could have ever forecasted what equity volumes would have done into this period. So again, in Q3 of 16, 35% of options mix would have equated to around 65,000 derivatives trades. Well, as of this morning, 31% of 330,000, like I said, that's north of 100,000. So we feel great about what we're doing on the derivatives front. And derivatives are a very profitable product, and it's one of the reasons that we've been so focused on growing this component of our business. We acquired the industry's top platform in Options House, and integrating that within the broader E-Trade ecosystem, marketing it through sort of the E-Trade brand and our very powerful advertising and marketing platform, we feel like we have the right tools and the right message to continue to increase that. And then on the managed asset goal of $6 billion, that's a pretty small number in the context of a $400 billion client asset portfolio. So it's not that $6 billion will somehow dramatically shift our revenue makeup. We wanted it as an illustration that we could indeed grow in a broader wealth context and not just for trading dollars, right? So we've talked about it a bunch in the past. Patrick has covered this before. You know, we broadly capture 10 to 12% of our customers' investable wallet. And so broadening our span of products to really appeal in the wealth management space, we think, is an important point of strategy. So through differentiating and creating a product that we think is clean, easy to use, very clearly articulated through our marketing platform, we think we'll be able to continue to grow that number well beyond the $6 billion.
Gotcha. And you spoke about things that maybe in September of 2016 the board couldn't necessarily have foreseen that are maybe impacting how you're trending towards your goals, either positively or negatively right now. But one of those things I think that they probably couldn't have contemplated was just how good the overall environment was going to be for everybody in the space. And obviously you guys have been putting up some good numbers, but your peers have as well. So do they grade you on a scale, if you will? Like, do they say, okay, here's what some of your peers are doing, and maybe we move the goalpost based off of how they're doing, or are they kind of looking at you in isolation?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I set context as to why we devised these goals. I think illustrating growth was really sort of their goal, and we've been able to do that. Now, to your point that the market's been growing and everybody's been growing, that's one way to look at it, right? That the rising tide will lift all ships, but this rising tide also creates tremendous competition, right? So it is more difficult today to succeed than it was when the market wasn't as strong as it is today. So I think our ability to successfully grow in this environment is even more difficult relative to the competition, because they're showing up with bigger wallets than we have and bigger guns when it comes to sales and marketing efforts. So I think the board absolutely appreciates that. I think the board also appreciates that you have to have the right product, the right message, the right strategy to capitalize on a market like we're seeing today. And so we feel very good about that. And I would hope the board feels very good about it too.
Got it. One of the attributes of your business model is it's relatively rate sensitive. And so when the Fed sounds like they're going to raise rates three times this year and the yield curve steepens, I'm sure you guys are feeling pretty good about that in the office. So can you talk about where your rate sensitivity is along the yield curve?
Yeah, sure. So, we have exhibited a remarkable elasticity of customer deposits for quite some time. So the biggest question we get when it comes to rate sensitivity is when and where will you reprice your liabilities, and our primary liability is customer deposits. Yeah, or deposit betas. Thank you. So to this point, we have left our rack rate pricing at 1 basis point. So we haven't felt the need just yet to move, but this is something we evaluate sort of daily, right? So the competitive landscape and whether or not this could be impacting growth, whether or not our customers are asking about it's something that we monitor very closely as to whether or not there's a need to move. And from a deposit beta standpoint, just to contextualize the E*TRADE account base and the asset base, on an average asset per account standpoint, we're at around $90,000 per account. Now, as I mentioned in the first answer, about 15% of the assets are in cash. So you're talking about $9,000 to $11,000 on average that are sitting in cash. So the difference between 1 basis point and something modestly higher doesn't necessarily equate to significant returns or concerns for customers. And for our customer base, when we look across history, they are much more interested in having cash that they can deploy at a moment's notice at a market opportunity and not at having sort of a yield-sensitive cash product. So that's what I would say on the liability side, right? We feel good, but it's something we monitor all the time, and to the extent we feel pressure, whether from the competition or through growth, we will absolutely address it. And for customers that do feel deeply passionate about their cash rate, we have products for them, right? But it's very different. It's a very different sort of move to change pricing across a bunch of accounts that don't care to address the ones that do. We think it's a little bit more impactful to address it at the tiers where it makes a little bit more sense. Now, in terms of the asset side, there are certain elements that are very sensitive to the short end of the curve. So our margin balances, for example, those will typically move point for point with a Fed move. And then there are components of the securities portfolio that are also variable rate tied to shorter rates. And then our overnight or segregated cash, that's also tied to the short rate. So there are components of the balance sheet that move more with the short rate. But broadly, we invest in securities that match the duration of our liability. So the securities portfolio is broadly invested in the 3.5 to 4 year duration range, which matches the customer deposit profile.
Got it. You kind of touched on you're competing against some large, well-financed companies with maybe bigger marketing budgets. And I think it's an industry where a lot of us would say there's an advantage to scale. So is there a disadvantage to scale? And maybe put it another way, is there an advantage to being smaller and nimbler than some of your competitors?
Yeah, we think so. We definitely think so. So to your point, to assume that we could do the exact same thing and have the exact same message as the competition on a lower budget and win, that would be pretty foolish, right? So there needs to be differentiation in the message, in the platform, in the service offering. And we feel that as a small organization, we actually have there's a great nimbleness about us, right? We can shift very quickly at a market opportunity. We can refocus the organization on a particular offering or component or campaign. So it's very easy to move quickly. And we hear that from a lot of the seasoned professionals that we hire into the firm, right? At my last firm, it would take this long to even get a meeting set up to talk about this, and you guys have already rolled out a beta version of the product. So we do feel really good about our size relative to the competition in terms of our ability to deliver. On the marketing message, it's the same point, right? We can't go out with advertising or marketing that looks and feels like the competition on lower spend and expect that we're going to grow at an outsized rate, right? So you'll see the E*TRADE voice advertising and overall marketing platform is much more irreverent. It's got a very specific flavor to it that is uniquely E*TRADE. So I think it's actually a real advantage to us to be able to move quickly. On the broader point of scale, I think the best gauge of scale is whether or not you're operating at a competitive operating margin. And we have an operating margin that's in line or better than our peers. So I do feel like we are operating at scale, and we are doing a pretty phenomenal job of growing relative to the competition.
Fair point. You recently acquired a relatively small RIA custodian, the Trust Company of America. What was the strategic rationale underlying that acquisition? And I think within that, can you touch on how that is going to benefit your stock plan business?
Sure. Well, you hit it right on the head. The stock plan business was really at the top of mind when we entered into this acquisition. TCA, for those of you that don't know, is a custody platform that serves registered investment advisors. It's very similar to E*TRADE in sort of its digital makeup, the culture of the firm and the folks very much aligned with our own. So we felt really good about that as a strategic fit. We acquired this, we think, in a very prudent way. It was a relatively low-cost acquisition that'll be accretive in very short order, but really to fill a specific need, which is within the corporate services business that I discussed earlier, we see a lot of the assets flow out of E*TRADE into the advised channel. And we don't have an answer for that, right? Our answer is really our direct channel. And for customers or potential customers that desire sort of a higher touch service that an advisor can provide, we kind of just watch them go. And so having some way to capture that wealth was really important to us. So through the acquisition of TCA, ultimately we'll set up a referral program where hopefully we can look to emerging wealth tiers and those that might be entering or will in due course need or likely look to an advisor, and hopefully we can provide them with an alternative, which will allow us to capture some of the economics as opposed to none of the economics.
Great. I think we have time for maybe one or two questions from the audience.
So I understand your point about available cash being like the bullets for the gun when they want to act quickly. There's a group, most of those people last with their family for that. But your performance on that could also be turned into a marketing opportunity. How do you view that vis-a-vis competition as far as your return on that? Does it enter into your marketing aspect at all?
So the question is around our deposit pricing, whether or not that's something we could market. And I'm assuming you're asking the question from the standpoint of, would you market a higher rate product? Yeah. So we actually have a lot of history in this. We for some time, we marketed high rate products on the banking side. And it was a successful growth engine for the business. But really our core focus now is just on the brokerage dollars, right? It's a much higher return profile if we can bring in a customer that has sort of much stickier cash. It's not a checking account or it's not, you know, quote unquote hot money that's just chasing a higher rate, and really focus on just providing the best brokerage services possible. We see the cash as sort of an output of that business. We don't currently look to it as sort of a leading or a generator of a business. We had done it in the past, and I think it led to a very different balance sheet strategy than we employ today. So I think the current strategy is really focus on the brokerage. Cash will be an ever-present component of those brokerage relationships, and make sure that we can capitalize on that value as best possible. Sir? Yeah, so the question was whether or not we're seeing deposits move into higher rate money market products. We see some. I mean, that's when I talk about monitoring the overall landscape, that's one of the things we look to. It hasn't happened in any way that's concerned us to the point where we feel necessary to move pricing.
And how much pressure did you feel during the big boom in cryptocurrency from your client base to try to survive?
So the question was whether or not our customers were asking for access to direct cryptocurrencies. I wouldn't say we felt pressure to launch a crypto exchange. There was certainly a level of customer activity through the platform, engaging in crypto-related ETFs and stocks, and it seemed to have a broader market impact of just bringing people back to the table. So it was a very good thing for us while we don't actually offer crypto. I think it's something we would always explore. If that's the next leg of personal investing or financial services, it'd be something we'd be happy to look at, but it's not something we're in currently.
All right. With that, unfortunately, we're out of time, but we will have a breakout session downstairs.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you very much.